Welcome to the Menopause Conversations podcast. My name's Angela Council, and I am your host for this podcast. And this is where you learn all about menopause, what is happening to your body, to your hormones, and life in general. Everything is changing, and sometimes it can seem really, really confusing. But this is where the confusion stops right now. This podcast will share with you everything you need to know about how you can navigate your menopause transition with ease. So sit back and enjoy the show. Bye for now. So welcome back to this week's episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. It is fantastic to be here, and I'm currently live on Facebook and Instagram as I'm recording this. And what I want to talk to you about tonight, it's something called metabolic syndrome, and more specifically, insulin resistance, which is a form of metabolic syndrome, and how that influences a woman's transition through menopause, in particular, the weight gain. And this is a really big issue for many, many women. I run polls quite often within my community, and I say, what's your biggest issue when it comes to a menopause? And, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, women will say, this weight gain when I've done nothing different, and it's all sitting around, primarily around my waist, and I can't get rid of it. So this meno belly. And, you know, whilst we are in a time when it's a very much, you know, we want to accept our bodies for what they are, but many women feel uncomfortable because this is not the shape their body has been their entire life. Now, all of a sudden, there's these changes that are happening. And, you know, you might go to your doctor and your doctor kind of says, oh, well, it's just part of menopause. Live with it. And that's not true. And I really want tonight, hopefully tonight, you're going to get a better understanding of why this happens. That it's not, whilst it happens at menopause isn't really the problem. There's something else going on. So let's just start with the definition of what metabolic syndrome is. Now, I also just want to say that metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, these are relatively new kind of medical labels. They weren't around, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. These are new. This comes with our modern lifestyle. And when I very first started in practice, it used to be called Syndrome X. And now it's called metabolic syndrome. But a syndrome basically means it's not a defined disease. It just means that there's a few different things that could be happening. And let's just kind of have a bit of a guess about it. So the definition of metabolic syndrome is a medical condition that involves a group of risk factors that increase the likelihood of developing cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and other health problems. A person is defined as having metabolic syndrome if they have abdominal obesity, so excess fat around the waist, high blood pressure, high blood sugar levels, a high level of triglycerides, which is a type of fat in the blood, and low HDL cholesterol, which is HDL is known as kind of the good cholesterol. There's really no, there's no good and bad. It's in our body for a reason. But when you have low levels of HDL, it generally means that your LDL levels are too high. So that is a broad definition of what metabolic syndrome is. Now, insulin resistance sits underneath that umbrella, and it can develop over time. And some of, you know, to start with, we may not even really notice it's there, but once it kind of gets diagnosed, the symptoms are high blood sugar levels, increased hunger or sugar cravings. It can get to frequent urination or excessive thirst, fatigue or lack of energy, difficulty losing weight, particularly around the waist, high blood pressure, high triglyceride levels, and for some women, PCOS. So as you can see, there's a lot of crossover between metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. So let me quickly explain what insulin resistance is. So our body, insulin is a hormone, and please excuse the barking of the dog in the background. I'm not sure what he's barking at. Hopefully it's not coming through too annoying. Insulin is a hormone that's released that helps the body take up glucose. So when we eat food and it's got glucose in it, the glucose is running around in our blood. What we want is we actually want it in our cells, because when it's in our cells, we can use that for energy. So insulin helps the blood glucose get into the cells. So insulin's kind of a bit like a gatekeeper. And what kind of happens, the glucose comes along, and in a cell, there's kind of all these little gates. And it's like glucose comes up and knocks on the door, and insulin says, "Hi, come in." And it will keep allowing enough insulin into the cell for what the cell requires. Now, once the cell is full and there's no more space for glucose in the cell, basically insulin shuts off the cell, and it stops answering that response. And this happens in every cell in the body. So if we're continually putting glucose into our body through the food that we're eating, what happens is after time, the cells are full. There's no more space to put the glucose in. So insulin goes, okay, so what I'm going to do when I'm full, there's no space to put glucose in the cells, they're completely full and I haven't used up any energy yet, I'm going to store the excess as fat. So insulin then converts sugar over to fat and stores fat primarily around our organs, around our abdominal area. It's the main place where insulin stores that fat. And it stores it there for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's easy to get it from when it's stored around the middle. It's easier for when the body needs that extra energy to kind of go and get it. It's not in other organs. Also, as a protective mechanism. In days gone by when there was, we were cave people and all of that, and we had to fend for our life a lot. Storing this fat around the waist allowed us to protect our vital organs. So that's what insulin does. It stores that extra fat around the waist. And once it's stored there, it's very hard to get it out, particularly if we continue to eat these sugary foods, these carb foods. And there's a real biological reason why this happened. This isn't just the body going crazy, because in the past, once again, go back to our ancestors, there wasn't an abundance of food, and we would eat with seasons, and that, in summer season, spring season, there was a lot of fruit, so a lot of sugary food. So, our ancestors used to eat that food. It will get stored around the middle, because we'd have all this excess glucose. So insulin would store that around the middle, knowing that in winter time there was going to be a lack of food. So we needed to be able to draw on that fat to get through those famine times. So it's like the feast and the famine. And so this is how the body is designed to work. Unfortunately, living in the 21st century world, we don't have feast and famines. We have food available to us all of the time. And when we're continually putting that food into our body, and insulin's continually have to take it into the cells or store it as fat, after a while, insulin kind of stops responding to the knock on the door, and it just keeps shunting everything over to fat. And so when that happens, everything's storing as fat and it's going around the waist. The cells aren't getting enough glucose, the energy that it wants, because insulin is just sending everything over to store as fat. The cells aren't getting energy, so your energy levels go down. You then start craving more. You want more because you want the energy, you want quick energy, and the way to get quick energy is through the sugary carb foods. So you start craving that, and you're eating more of that, and then the insulin just keeps sending everything over to fat, and we're in this cycle of hunger, storing fat, not being able to release it. And this is what happens. This is insulin resistance. And women who have PCOS have an imbalance with this. So there are women who've got PCOS, and it is to do with this. Whilst it's seen as a reproductive condition, it's not really. It's a metabolic condition. And it is because this imbalance in hormones, but it can create problems with your period, so irregular periods, infertility, and hormonal imbalances as well. But it isn't a metabolic condition. It's not really a reproductive condition. So we need to treat it as a metabolic event, a metabolic condition. So why does this all seem to get worse when we get to menopause? There is a reason for this. Now, estrogen protects us against insulin resistance. So estrogen is very, very protective. And, you know, once again, if we look back at our ancestry and the way the human body was created, the female body was designed to reproduce. That's what we're there. So our hormones of estrogen and progesterone are very, very protective. And when things start to go out of balance, estrogen and progesterone kind of put a bit of a wall up or put a curtain across, so you can't really see what's going on. But once estrogen level comes down, which is natural, it's supposed to, it's like the curtains come away, and now we start to see what's really going on with our health. You know, we start to see insulin resistance. And a lot of insulin resistance for many women comes from the foods we've eaten, the diets we've had over, you know, the last 30, 40 odd years. Now, I'm sure that everyone who is watching this is kind of somewhere in the same vintage as I am, and you all know about low-fat diets. We were told at one stage that we needed to be low-fat diet. Everything needed to be low-fat. And I know that I did. We always wanted to go low-fat, low-fat, low-fat. And we're, you know, there are all these packaged foods out there that were sold as low fat. And we're told the best thing for us is low fat. The problem with low fat processed food is fat's quite tasty. And when you take the fat out of food, it does a couple of things. Number one, you lose the taste. So you have to put something back to make it taste, because otherwise people wouldn't buy the food. And generally what they're putting back is sweeteners and sugars. And the other thing that when you take the fat out, we lose the nutrition of the fat, but we lose the density of the food. So it becomes, when we have it, when we consume it, it's like a lighter version. So if you just think of milk, full cream milk as opposed to light milk. Light milk is very watery and it's not very filling. But when we have full cream milk, because it's got all that cream in it, Not that I'm advocating anyone going out there drinking lots of milk, but I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about. It's like there is a depth to that. There is a fullness to that because it's got the fat in it. Take the fat out, we've lost that fullness in the food and we need to eat more. And we eat more and we think, oh, we can eat more because it's low fat, but it's got more sugar in it. So what we're doing is we're triggering insulin over and over and over again every time we're eating this low-fat food. And many of us have grown up in that, you know, that era of low-fat food. Luckily, it's not quite as still around a little bit these days, but it's not quite as prevalent as what it was, say, in the 70s and the 80s, that, you know, everybody was on a low-fat diet using low-fat processed foods. Now, this caused a big issue with our insulin. But as I said, estrogen kind of covered that up a bit, and we didn't see so much. There were some symptoms. Many of us probably didn't notice them as much. And it's not until we have these hormonal changes in menopause that we start to see them. So this is what's happened. And it's not just the low-fat food, these artificial sweeteners. So, you know, everyone kind of says, oh, well, sugar is the problem. Sugar is a problem. But artificial sweeteners, even though they're not sugar, they also trigger an insulin response. So if you're, you know, the number of women that I, who first start working with me, and they're drinking no sugar diet Coke, and I put aside the fact that Coke is full of so many chemicals and everything, the sweeteners that are in these no sugar diet Coke, they trigger insulin as well. It's the sweetness that triggers it, not the sugar. Sugar, you know, we kind of got to a stage where we say, okay, well, we'll stop having sugar because sugar's the problem. Sugar's not the whole problem. It's the sweetness that's the problem. So using these artificial sweeteners, which have got other issues as well, but just the sweetness is triggering insulin. And insulin is being triggered all of the time. And we're resistant to the insulin, so we're storing more and more fat. So this becomes a problem. And so many women have this issue. Not every woman, but there are some health types. And over the last couple of weeks, I've been talking a little bit about the difference in health types based on our genetics and our choices and everything that we've made up until now. And if you go back and listen to the last couple of episodes, and I particularly last week where I spoke about the different type of health types And the week before, I also spoke a little bit more about that as well. So listen to the last couple of podcasts and you will learn that we are all different and we all have different genetic makeup. And there are some health types that are more genetically predisposed to insulin resistance. So that means that you're more likely to have insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is the precursor to diabetes. And if you've got a history of diabetes in your family, of cardiovascular disease in your family, insulin resistance in your family, then you are a higher risk of this happening to you. Doesn't mean that just because that's your genes and your genetic makeup that it has to happen. There is many things that you can do to turn that around, to switch those genes off, but you do have a predisposition to it. And there's things that you can do about it. Now, some of the general things that you can do is, and it is really hard too, because, you know, we say, oh yeah, just stop sugar. But once you stop sugar, you still have this craving because the body and it's got used to the way it is, it becomes resistance. And particularly our gut bacteria is formed based on the foods that we eat. So if we eat foods that are sweet and that are processed, full of sugars and things like that, and we stop eating those foods, what happens is that gut bacteria kind of starts screaming at you, give me sugar, give me sugar, give me sugar, because it's no longer being fed, because you've got gut bacteria that have been trained to survive on sugar. And you take that out of your diet, now you're getting these cravings, and it's not actually you that has the craving, it's these gut bacteria, these unhealthy gut bacteria that are craving it, sending messages to your brain going, I want more sugar. And then the other side of it is that you don't have enough nutrition, so you're nutrient deficient and your body is craving more food. It's craving more food because what it's craving is more nutrition. And if you just keep putting nutritionless food into your body, it's going to crave it more and more. So just what it's craving is nutrition. What your brain is telling you, it's craving food. So if this isn't an easy change to make, because the body has got used to the way you've been feeding it. And it will, you know, you might get through for a couple of days going, oh, I'm going to go sugar free. But by the third day, you're kind of screaming out of your head because you're looking for something sweet. And I'm sure I'm not alone here with, when I describe this, I know many of you probably have experienced this. So there are a few things that we can do. Number one, make sure you're getting enough fiber, fat, and protein in your diet. Now, how much you require does depend on your specific health type. Some health types need more protein than other health types, but we all need more fiber. In general, I'm going to say the majority of people do not consume enough fiber. And the best place to get fiber is from vegetables. So simple, add more vegetables into your diet. And when you do that, you're going to find that you're going to feel satiated more because it will fill you up. And that fiber, and even though there might be, in vegetables there are carbs, because vegetables are carbs and they're sugars, but it's the fiber slows down the absorption of that glucose and stops that insulin response. So you're not just sending everything over to fat stores. It allows your body to use it because it's actually absorbed slower. So fiber is important. So more plant foods, more water make a massive amount of difference. And then also the fats and the protein. Another thing that can really help too is just moving your body after you eat. So if you eat, particularly if you eat a larger meal, go and move your body. So rather than, eating a meal and then expecting your body to store all of that glucose, either in the cells or in your fat stores, go and use it, utilize it. Go and actually exercise and burn off what you've just put in there. And then whatever's left over will then be able to be used by the cells. You're not going to have excess for insulin to store as fat. So we just want to use this up. And then you're also going to get more energy as well. Now, I've spoken a little bit about health types tonight and the different ways bodies work. Now, there is a lot that goes into learning what your particular health type is. And I am teaching this in the Secret to Thriving in Menopause workshop, which is starting If you're watching me live, it's starting on Sunday, so February the 26th. If you're listening to the recording, we're starting on 26th of February, still starting the same day. But it depends on when you hear the recording. You may have to book into the next one, which will be happening later on in the year. So in this Secret to Thriving in Menopause workshop, I'll be going into this insulin in a lot more detail, also be talking a little bit more about the role that stress plays in what's going on when you're going through menopause, because stress also plays a role in insulin resistance as well. I explain that in a lot of detail within the workshop. And then I'm going to go into understanding your genetic profile. And I'm going to help you work out which health type you are based on your genetic profile. And we do that by looking at your body shape. So your body shape actually gives us some clues as to what health type you are. And then on the third night, once we've kind of worked out what health type you are, I'm going to basically give you a blueprint, a personalized blueprint, which will give you the clues as to the type of foods that are best for you, the best time to eat, best time to exercise, the best time to sleep, because it is different for the different health types. I'm going to go through all of that in the workshop. Hi, I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. Now, I just want to let you know that as this podcast goes live, the Thriving in Menopause workshop has now completed. I recorded this particular episode live into the Facebook group and on Instagram, and it was before the workshop had been run. So the workshop has already been run, but the information about health types and what causes you to put on this menobelly that I talk about a lot, you can still get if you want to go to bit.ly/menobelly_ebook. So menobelly_ebook, all in little letters. So bit.ly/menobelly_ebook. And that will give you more information about health types, about some of the other causes of your symptoms, of your weight gain that isn't related to your hormones, because there's other things going on. So you won't miss out on the information because the workshop's not on. Grab the ebook, and then when I do run the next workshop, which will be in a couple of months' time, you'll be on my email list and you'll be the first to know when the free workshop opens up again, and you can join and learn more about how you can thrive in menopause. Now, just as I finish up here today, I really want to thank you for listening to the Menopause Conversations podcast. You know, when you do these podcasts, sometimes you never know if anyone's listening. Then every so often I meet someone face to face and they go, "Oh, I recognize your voice. I listen to your podcast." And that really, I mean, it lights me up to know that there are people that listen to the podcast, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to actually spend with you as you, whatever you're doing. If you're like me, I listen to podcasts as I go out walking, or if you're driving, whenever it is that you're listening to podcasts, I really want to thank you. If you have the opportunity, it's not always easy, if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be great. Do need an iPhone to do that, to be able to get in and leave a ratings and review. But you know, if you're listening, just share, tell other women about it. If they don't listen to podcasts, show them how to download a podcast on their phone. So more and more women get to understand that menopause does not need to be a time of struggle. There are things that you can do that can put yourself back in control, that your hormones don't need to be in control. I truly want to change the narrative that is around at the moment about menopause always being the worst time of your life. It is not true. Menopause can be the best time of your life. And yes, there can be a few bumps and lumps along the way, but there are so many things you can do to manage it, to make it a more level, you know, time of life. Your body is changing. There's nothing you can do about that. That is going to happen, because as hormones change, your body changes. But embracing those changes and taking the opportunity to create something new for your health, your life, your way of being, that's your opportunity right now, and I invite you to take it. So once again, thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with another episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. Bye for now.